Hi there. This is Christina Gomez of Paradigm Shifts and the Debrief Media, and you're listening to Wayne and Michelle on the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Welcome to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast, coming to you from the glacial dumping grounds known as the Michigan Basin. I'm Michelle.
And I am Wayne.
And we are a Michigan-based husband and wife educator and podcasting duo that, after having a UFO sighting in March of 2018, have started to examine UFOs and other paranormal topics within Michigan and beyond.
Topics include UFOs, the paranormal, conspiracy theories, ghosts, alternative history and archaeology, cryptids, and all things strange and paranormal. So sit back, grab a drink, and come along with us on this journey down the paranormal rabbit hole. Hey everyone, Wayne here. Just wanted to let everybody know this is our very first ever bonus episode, and we couldn't think of a better group of guys to have come on to go down these strange conversational rabbit holes other than Burton and Aaron from the Lost in the Dark podcast and also fellow Michiganders. Now, unfortunately, Aaron couldn't make it, so it was basically Burton from Lost in the Dark and then Michelle and I. And later on, throughout about halfway through the episode, Michelle had to leave and go to bed because she had to get up the next morning to go and do her band mom thing. She is doing that right now, and this is why you're only hearing my voice currently. But these bonus episodes are going to be just regular conversations about paranormal, about UFOs, wherever the conversation takes us. Now, this is also going to be a swap cast. And what that means is that you can hear this episode on two different feeds. You can hear this on our Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast feed, and you can also hear it on the Lost in the Dark podcast feed. Both feeds will have this episode released for both audiences to be able to hear. We hope you enjoy this bonus episode and just realize that we decided to go down all kinds of rabbit holes, and it may piss some of you off. It may leave you scratching your heads. It might have you nodding in agreement. It might have you shaking your head saying that these guys are crazy, which all could be true all at the same time. But anyways, we just want to say thank you. We enjoy doing this content for you. Every download helps. And we can't thank Burton and Aaron enough for wanting to do this, and Burton for dealing with me and my craziness throughout the whole 2 hours, 2.5 hours of this, where we speculate on all kinds of things. Yeah, we just try to have a good time, and we hope you enjoy the conversation. So get ready for the first ever Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast bonus episode and swap cast featuring Burton from the Lost in the Dark podcast. This will be one wild ride. All right, so here we are in our very first official swap cast, and we are going to be releasing this episode on two different feeds. That's why we're calling it a swap cast. We're going to be releasing it on our Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast feed. And then we've got Burton tonight from Lost in the Dark podcast. So Burton, welcome to the podcast.
We're missing Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron, who may be joining us in a little bit.
Maybe.
We'll see what happens.
Good to be here, though. Always good to be here, and always good to get to talk to you guys again. Very excited for this one.
Yeah, this is just kind of one of those random things we decided to do. So we're going to release this as a bonus episode. What's been going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Honestly, not a whole lot. We had a lot of podcasts this week, actually probably more than I've ever done in a week. It's been crazy just trying to get a whole bunch of stuff together for just this, haunted season, which is another perfect reason why it's perfect that I get to talk to you guys tonight.
Right.
And yeah, that's not a whole lot. How about you guys?
Well, first of all, I want to say, because I've been watching what's going on and stuff. Mm-hmm. You're lying. You got a lot of stuff going on. First enough. Of all, the other podcast you started, mm-hmm. What? And now correct me if I'm wrong. Dine With Me in Hell.
It's it's kind of it's a playlist on our podcast main channel. But we are planning on turning it into its own thing here in a little while. Yeah.
This is the hot sauce stuff.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. So that's awesome.
Lots of people seem to enjoy those. It's cool.
Well, you know, it's kind of like those reaction videos. I go mm-hmm. down those rabbit holes of, opera singer critiques, Black Sabbath or Ronnie yes. James Dio or whatever.
Yes.
Next thing I know, I'm on the next one and the next mm-hmm. one, the next one, because it's interesting to hear these people that are classically trained in any type of music other than like rock and roll, heavy metal.
Right.
Those kind of things. And then they come on and say that. So, but, what else you got going on?
Lots of podcasts this week with a whole bunch of different bands. We had, Kill the Imposter on, Reflection of Flesh, Convalescence I talked to last night. And we got a few more coming up before, and hopefully all these will be out next week. So hopefully next week is just packed. And then on top of that, Aaron and I are going to get together and do a Halloween special like we do every year. And this year actually is the first time I'll ever be going to a show on Halloween night. And it's down there at the Diesel Lounge in Chesterfield. And half the bands on it, like 90% of the bands on it are bands that I've had on the podcast, and many I haven't gotten to see live or meet in person yet. So who's
on that ticket?
That everybody on that one is Hate Unbound, band called Hate Unbound, Pestilent Age, Recorruptor, close friends of ours up here in Lansing, a band called Reflection of Flesh, War, which is spelled WOR, a band from, I believe, Pennsylvania called The Breathing Process, and The Convalescence will also be on that one. And all those bands are in support of Michigan band called Battlecross.
Yeah, and Battlecross got pretty big there for a while.
Yeah, they did. And I was a huge fan. They opened like almost every show I would ever go to at that point in time. And they haven't really done much in quite a few years. So I'm very excited to get to see them again.
Yeah. Now, were they a Lansing band or west side of the state band? Or
I think they were, I believe they're originally from the Flint area, at least the singer. At least the singer, because I saw him in his previous band before he was in Battlecross, out at this tiny, tiny little place that's not even there anymore out there in Flint. So I think that's where they're from.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Should be a good time. Should be a good time.
Absolutely. All right. So yes, it is getting close to the Halloween holiday. Yes. Well, the whole month is that kind of a holiday. And you know, when mm-hmm. that first cold air comes in, you get that creepy feeling, the leaves start falling off the trees, everything looks like it's dying, and creepy. So speaking to that, what new like horror movie or anything have you seen recently?
I have actually really been getting back into it in kind of a crazy way. There were just a handful of horror movies that I realized I'd never seen that I should probably see, like all the Rob Zombie movies and stuff.
Oh, yes.
And and so I started going through all of them, and then it really kind of like reignited something in me, like a passion for that genre. And so I've really just been going nuts. And the best one that I've seen recently, one that really sticks out to me, because I totally missed it on my radar when it came out, a movie called Trick or Treat. Mm-hmm. And it's like an anthology style horror film, which I love. And I like Aaron and I went to a whole bunch of Halloween stores here in town. Every single one had like a big section that was just for stuff from this movie. And I was like, have you seen this? He's like, no. I was like, why does this have all this stuff here in all these Halloween stores? And so we ended up deciding to watch it. And yeah, it really impressed me a lot. I couldn't believe, after seeing it, I couldn't believe there aren't like five more of them already. Like, it's just this only one, but it was fantastic. If you haven't seen that one, I highly recommend it.
I've seen a few of those types of movies. I'm not a big fan of the jump scare type of movies. I'm more into like the psychological kind of horror movies. Like, my favorite that always stands out to me is the movie Seven.
Oh, I love Seven.
Right. But you don't really, you know, something's going on, but you really don't know. And it's like that big reveal and, you know, what happens at the end there. No spoilers, even though it's really old, but what a great
movie.
In the
box.
Yeah. Don't open the box.
See, and I'm still like a classic fan of like The Exorcist.
Okay.
Well, that's more of a psychological one. I mean, there's some jump scare stuff in there, but like The Seventh Sign with, was it Demi Moore?
That there's was a that good one. The Insidious movies. I like the Insidious movies.
Yeah, so I like the ones that have a little bit more of a story to them than just like the gore, kind of a thing. So
yeah, I'm with you. I'm definitely with you on that. Have you ever heard or seen a movie called The Jacket starring Adrian Brody?
No,
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
I highly, highly recommend. If that's the, if you like Seven, not to say that they're like about the same things at all or anything like that,
right?
But it's that sort of feeling, that sort of psychological thing involved as well. And it's lots of twists. And yeah, it was, that's a great movie. If you like movies like that, that one you should definitely check out.
Yeah, that came out in 2005.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been out for a while.
Mm-hmm. One that I'm very interested in seeing is one called Midsommar. It's
it's recent.
It's recent. It's 2019, but it's by, the director is Ari Aster. And that is a movie that is riddled, and this was kind of what I was going to ask you next. It's riddled with occult symbology. And when you watch those horror movies, do you ever pick out and, you know, look for those kind of things in those movies? And do you ever notice them?
Well,
certain
I would say
placements of props and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say yes, but also a lot of horror movies, I think, are that I've seen, at least, like, have some sort of, if it's a ghost movie, like an exorcism movie, there's always going to be a religious iconography around. And so that I've definitely noticed, but and sometimes they do it on purpose too.
Yeah. Like if you look at a certain scene, like, I know people won't be able to see like behind me, but on the wall behind me is a large clock that's in the shape of a stopwatch. You know, they'll do something like that in a movie, and then they'll have it right at a certain time, like 3:33, you know, or something like, you know, it'll be a little bit of like hints in there.
It's like subtle. Know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're actually going to be having a guy on in November, an author who has written books about occult symbology in cinema. So we're really excited for that. That's what he does. He goes through these movies and sees what the people in Hollywood, you know, kind of stick in there, or really from other countries as well. You know, it's a big thing. So
there's definitely, and that is definitely, yeah, it is something I keep an eye out for a lot, though, because that's like with, you know, it's kind of the same thing as heavy metal in some ways.
Oh, where, well, heavy metal, you know, don't try to hide it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, like when I was coming up in the metal scene, when I was a teenager, it was Merciful Fate into King Diamond. And it was just like, you know, it was just blatantly out there that, you know, here's all this symbology, and, you know, his microphone is a set of bones, you know, shaped in a cross, and you know, the upside down crosses on the stage and on his head and all this kind of stuff.
Literally,
you know,
painted onto his face.
Yeah. Right. And then you had bands like Deicide, you know, Glenn Benton, who took a cross and branded himself right between the eyes with, you know, upside down cross, you know, and, you know, metal, that's one thing you can say about metal. You'll always know where they stand.
Yep. Absolutely. No question of that. But yeah, it's an interesting question though. I'm going to start keeping more of an eye out now as I continue to watch all these movies.
It's kind of like one of those things where it's like, you don't notice everybody else is driving a Jeep until you buy a Jeep,
yeah,
kind of a thing.
Yep.
You know, or a certain type of car. It's like, yep, man, every other vehicle since I bought my Jeep Renegade, man, I pass a lot of Jeeps now. You yeah know, what's the deal with that? So
90% of the time he gets the wave back.
90%. The only people that don't wave in the Jeep I've found are women. So women out there, if you drive a Jeep, if somebody waves to you, it's the Wrangler wave.
They're too busy, you know, to wave.
don't think you're, you know, having some creepy guy flirting with you in another Jeep. It's just what we do. what's the saying? Some people get the wave. Some people get it. Some people don't. Right. When they talk about the wave.
That's funny. I've never owned a Jeep. But so I wouldn't.
Well, when you own it, when you eventually you will own a Jeep, I'm sure. and it'll be the last vehicle you'll ever want to own because they're just amazing. But you'll start noticing people giving you the wave.
Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's that. So it's like a W.
Yeah,
it's a okay. W.
That is, right. So I like to drive the Jeep just to do the wave because, you know, I drive an Escape. So, I mean, what would I do? This?
Yeah.
See if I can get anybody else who drives an Escape to give me an E.
Right.
Well, you do that in the wrong neighborhood, and you might get right shot.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that might not be the best one.
You're not driving the Escape anymore.
Well, I just you know, look at my wife's poor vehicle, and I go, well, they named it correctly because that's what everybody wants to do once you get inside of it.
Oh my gosh. I just got my car back. It is okay. It's a 2020. So that right there has already jinxed it. But
your car has the coof.
My car had the coof. So far it's been at the dealership, not once, but twice in the last month.
God.
So I had either a rental car or a loaner from the dealership. They even replaced all of my fuel injectors and the fuel rail.
Wow.
And it has 16,000 miles. So if this tells you the precursor and like the foreshadowing of what my future of this car is going to be, thank God I bought the extended warranty.
Well,
yeah, there you go.
You know, and not to go down the rabbit hole of talking about vehicles, because I am no kind of a expert on vehicles at all. However, when they put a 3-cylinder into an SUV and then they turbocharge it, you can't expect anything else but problems to start happening from, you know, these poor engines that have been over-engineered to deliver a certain horsepower, yet a fuel efficiency rating or whatever.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Well, I've got it back and the wrench light isn't coming on. So that's half the battle.
That is half the battle. All right. What did you want to talk about tonight, man? We're getting all over the place. It is a bonus episode. So, you know, people expect anything at this point.
Oh, yeah. But honestly, I'm glad you asked me about horror movies because I was going to ask you about that as well. One thing off the top, I've been looking into quite a bit ever since I heard about it on your show, this Michigan Triangle thing.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? That it seems to be a whole lot of occurrences and over a long period of time.
Yeah. And, you know, it really, from what I've quickly looked into, there seems to be a lot of things involved in it, from aircraft disappearances to shipwrecks and ship disappearances. And now what's interesting is this discovery of the North American Stonehenge underwater. So somewhere located in Lake Michigan, they haven't really said where, which, you know, you don't want people going out there and stuff, but under the water is what they're saying is a circular stone structure at the bottom of a shallow point of Lake Michigan, and it's arranged very much similar to Stonehenge.
Yes.
Now, the one thing it doesn't have, that as far as I can tell, that it doesn't have is the, what are they, the lintel stones, the stones that sit on top of the two.
Okay.
Right. It's just, they're just standing stones, where when you look at the rest of that area of Lake Michigan, you look at the bottom of the lake, it's smooth, it's sandy. There's no other rocks there, but there appears to be this man-made rock path with boulders that lead underwater to this circular structure. And it's the only one ever found inside the lake like this, at least right now. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting because then divers have said that if you look at one of the stones, you can kind of make out a image of a mastodon. Now,
okay.
I don't know for sure about that because that can be a very, what do I want to say, a confirmation bias and a case of pareidolia. Yeah, a pareidolia case where, now that they say that you see, it's like once you see something, you can't unsee it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have the guy on the video from one of those shows that went out there with the college professor and the divers that discovered this thing. And he does the tracing of the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now that you show me your lines on there, mm-hmm. I can't unsee it to give it a really good, you know, objective look and see, is that really a carving?
Right.
And so I don't know if they've gotten to the point where they've gone down and actually done LIDAR or scanned the rocks and somehow underwater to get a good 3D model of it. I haven't, you know, looked into it that much, but yeah, it resembles Stonehenge. It's under the water in Lake Michigan. And it's in a very shallow segment of it. And I find that extremely interesting.
Yeah.
Along with all the other things that have gone on with the sinkings and the disappearance of aircraft. And I think this one article I was reading here says that the first abnormal incident happened around 1679.
Yeah.
So, and I believe, what do they say here? It was a trading vessel or something along those lines. One of the largest sailing vessels of its time set out on its maiden voyage in 1679 to find a northwest passage to China and Japan. All went well until the ship reached the Michigan Triangle and never came back. So, yeah.
It's very strange. I think that it's kind of interesting that it's really kind of, maybe it is because of the discovery of that Stonehenge thing, but it's interesting that this seems to be being more talked about now than I've ever really heard anybody talk about it before. And that the structure underwater there, it's definitely in, like, it's like concentric circles almost. But even though I don't think they are at, like, the actual things are in circles, if you were to draw lines around them, it would look like an above the head shot of Stonehenge.
Yeah.
A lot of ways. And that's I don't know how to explain that one.
Yeah, I don't know. And could it be the location of these things that they call ley lines, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, a place where energy flows, or, you know, again, it's one of those things where a lot of the times those rocks were like equinoctial markers where they marked where the sun came up and would set on the equinox and then on the summer solstices and the winter solstice, so that they would know time. They would know their place in time. And, you know, I don't know if any of those rocks have been matched up with any type of cardinal points or the setting and the rising and the setting sun or anything along those lines. So it'd be interesting to see how much further they've gone with things, but yeah. It says here that the triangle goes from Ludington to Benton Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you found?
Yeah.
And then Benton Harbor to Manitowoc, Wisconsin?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And then back to Ludington. So,
which is most of the middle of the lake.
Yeah, right. Right. And, you know, it's a big lake. Mm-hmm. You can have all kinds of interesting weather patterns and stuff that happen. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So what do you got on this Michigan Triangle thing?
I want more. Well, in terms of the actual triangle, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure if there is something paranormal going on here, or if it's like we said, it's at Lake Michigan's like the second largest lake on Earth, right? Something like that.
I believe it is like the third.
Okay.
But so, what difference does it make?
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's one, that large.
One of the largest lakes on Earth. And then you section off a giant middle chunk of it. Odds are there's going to be a lot of weird stuff that's happened there over the years. You know, whether it's paranormal or not, I'm not sure. I really want to know where this Stonehenge thing is exactly located, if it's in that. And I want to know a lot more about that. I want people to do like studies, like you said, LIDAR, to see if that is in fact something that's man-made, because that would, you know, alternative history, that would, I feel like that would kind of really be a big piece of evidence in that category.
Yeah. That if you can get some kind of a date on those, on that structure,
mm-hmm.
you know, guesstimate it, then again, you're talking about people that weren't given very much, you know, credit for anything other than being, you know, wearing their butt flaps and going around killing animals and gathering, you know, loincloths and atlatls and slingshots and, you know, killing animals. And, you know, we didn't do much of anything else. And it's like, okay, stop dumbing us down, people. I think we were a little bit more advanced than you want to know.
Yeah.
But yeah. It would be interesting to see when this thing, if we could get some legitimate dating done, because, you know, also remember that, you know, we had a huge amount of ice on top of, you know,
exactly
the northern part of North America here. Mm-hmm. And that covered, you know, Michigan and Lake Michigan. I mean, I think down here we were considered under about 2 miles of ice somewhere like in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, nothing could have happened before the ice age until it, you know, receded in whatever caused the ending of that last ice age so quickly. It's interesting because the lake, for those rocks to be assembled, the lake would have had to have been very shallow at the time.
Yes.
So it'd be interesting to see where they place that.
Yeah. That's what's just interesting to me about it for sure.
Yeah.
Next up, I do have another, one little, like, Michigan related, you know, where we are by the time this comes out, we're just a few days away from Halloween and Devil's Night and all that stuff. Do you know the history of Devil's Night at all?
I want to say it had something to do with some fires or something that happened, but, and then, you know, Devil's Night then became the, well, maybe that's more local, right?
Well, that's the thing, is it kind of started in Detroit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of started there and, you know, progressively got worse and worse. But a lot, most places outside of Michigan, you bring up Devil's Night and they don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Which I always found pretty interesting.
I wondered if it, you know, had something to do with rioting and things back in the day.
Something at some point. Yeah. Had something to do with that. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what.
I remember as a kid, you know, it was going out and egging cars and putting toilet paper in trees, and nobody ever knew, you know, especially the kids, why you did that stuff. It was just something to go do, you know.
And, it started to be linked to the arsons in Detroit in the late 60s. And the night of mischief.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's when they started burning down like abandoned houses and
things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just running around like little Lokis.
Yeah.
The tricksters are out and about. Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Do you guys, one thing I haven't heard you talk much about on the show yet is your stance on cryptids. Where do you guys stand on the cryptid thing?
That's a good question. I guess it depends on the cryptid. And
I know that we've got a guest coming up.
Right, we
talking
do.
Talking about cryptids.
Yep, he's a Bigfoot guy. He hunts Bigfoot.
Okay.
And I say hunt. I don't even know if that's the proper terminology.
I'd say search.
I think from all of the stuff that we've gathered so far since like our sighting and people we've talked to, I think these things are somehow linked.
You think so?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
And I'm just speculating. I'm going off of just what's been going around in my head from people we've talked to. And I think that whatever these entities are, whatever, they have a way of, I want to say like the skinwalker.
Okay.
They have a way of appearing to us as one thing, you know, that we observe them as. Mm-hmm. And so if we see some type of a large entity in the woods, our brain, like that mastodon on that rock, is going to try to make some kind of a recognizable pattern out of it and go, oh, that's a big hairy, you know, Bigfoot running, you know, that's a Sasquatch or whatever. And then it disappears. If you see some type of a craft and you don't know what that is, your mind's going to give it a shape. And if you see something in it, your mind will probably think little aliens with big eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Cryptids, considering that, like, if you look at the United States alone, only about 85% of the United States is settled. Mm-hmm. The rest is open area. Open land, forest, everything else. Could there be some type of a ape running around? Absolutely. Could there be a different species of an animal or even a chupacabra or something like that? Yeah, I think there could be. And when people say, you know, wouldn't we find a body or anything? Well, not necessarily. If you left your car sitting out untreated out in the wilderness somewhere, within about 200 years, you wouldn't recognize what it was. Maybe some of the plastic and stuff would be left, but the metal and anything metal in it would pretty much be gone. Any kind of cloth material or leather would probably be gone. The animals and fungus would decompose it, you know.
What was it that the lady that we ran into that parking lot that she was hell bent
on
stating that she saw out in like
a giant
California? Yeah.
Giant.
So tell this story. You got to hear this.
But before we even had our sighting, wasn't it?
I think it was. You know what? I just remember that she saw the Lake Tahoe shirts on us and it was like, I got to talk to them.
We got married in Lake Tahoe.
Oh, cool.
And we came, you know, and we live in Michigan, but we vacation out there and we like that area. And it's really very, very cool. You know, from a geologic standpoint, I'm just, you know, oohing and ahhing over the mountains and everything.
Yeah.
And we're in a parking lot of the local Kroger, you know, grocery store, trying to get groceries and hear this woman's voice say something to the kin of, do you like it out there? Do you like it in Tahoe? And I'm looking around and I see this woman, older lady, come walking up, and she kind of has the West Coast hippie vibe.
Okay.
You know, she's wearing some crystals and stuff. Don't know who she is or anything. And she proceeds to tell me and Michelle about how she swears up and down that there are giants living in those mountains. And they hide their caves with rocks and foliage and all of this stuff. And they have red hair and red beards, and they're large humanoid giants. And she was adamant about it. She was just talking and talking and talking. I've never heard anything like this at all. And I was just like, wow, I guess I'm not wearing a Lake Tahoe shirt around here anymore, because man, the West Coast wackies follow us back to Michigan. But, you know, and again, that's one of those things where it's like, what are you talking about? And then you start looking into things, and then you find out that there are, you know, reports back in history of them finding very large humanoid bones in North America, which is extremely interesting. But then you go, why are they holding this information back? And why do you have to be a kook or a conspiracy theorist to want to look into these things? And why are they burying this information? You know, that would be fascinating. I think people would love knowing the fact that there were some type of a large humanoid that walked around, you know, in North America. I mean, you know, but in the red hair and the, she said they have red hair and beards, red beards.
That's a very common element in a lot of giant sightings.
Well, and you know, it was interesting when we had on Brian Forrester, and he was talking about the elongated skulls, and they were doing those genetic testing and stuff. They had red hair.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the things that he said, that in Peru, that those, the elongated skull people, and I can't remember what the tribe or the race was called or whatever.
Right.
But, that they had red hair, and everybody else there had the more indigenous dark brown or black hair.
That's really weird.
Yeah. And the ones that had red hair were the ones that you could tell that their skull was not forcibly shaped like they do skull shaping. It was a natural genetic
condition.
Yeah. That their skulls were just formed that way.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, that's linked to a red hair, and then the red hair and the giants. It's, you know,
I don't know if you've ever heard it or not, but there is one really interesting story. I forget where I heard it now, but I think it was on a YouTube channel or something about a giant encounter in the Middle East. And what's interesting about this particular event is that it was military that had the encounter, and there's an actual military official report because the giant apparently killed a few of them, and they went up into the mountains. I know it was in the Middle East. I want to say Afghanistan, and they went up in the mountains to do something. And they find this cave, and a giant redheaded humanoid walks out. And I think somebody started fighting, and the giant ended up taking, I think, one or two people, ended up killing one or two people, and then they killed it. But yeah, the fact that it's actually an official document, you know, really kind of, and these are like military guys. Like, I don't think, why would they want to? You know, you make something like this up, and they find out you made it up, you can get in a lot of trouble, I would imagine. So I don't know why they would want to.
Yeah, I've never heard of that story before. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. That is a wild one for sure. So you think it's I think it's possible. I definitely believe in, I want to believe in cryptids. I want to get the evidence that means they're 100% there. Did you know this year has more sightings than ever, I think, in one year of the Loch Ness Monster?
You know, somebody had mentioned that before to me, and that I find that very interesting as well.
Like, lots of sightings this year. Really? It's crazy.
I wonder if it's just because there's more tourists going this year because everybody's been locked down.
Yeah.
You know, and now, so everybody's going and seeing something, and they're reporting it as Loch Ness. I don't know.
A recent one that was interesting was actually taken from above by a drone, and it admittedly could definitely be a case of pareidolia, but it does look like something that shape moving around down there under the surface of the water.
you know, look at the old myth or wives' tales of the sailors way back when in the 1600s of, you know, the Kraken.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
and these giant squids that would attack ships and, you know, modern day people are like, oh, you're full of crap, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, eventually things start washing up.
Yeah. I don't think that's a myth at all. I think that actually happened.
No. Yeah. I think those giant squids.
Yeah.
When they get hungry, they live deep in the ocean.
So deep.
And they know, I think the scientific name is Architeuthis.
Yes.
And
we only have a couple cases. There's like one or two really good footage of them underwater alive.
But right. Even
a lot of people even say that the ones you see in there, they can get way bigger. We found evidence that we found dead sperm whales washed up that looked like they had been attacked by a giant squid.
Absolutely. I've
never seen one that big.
Well, they also found like non-digested beaks inside the stomachs of these sperm whales because the sperm whales will eat them.
Whoa.
And there's more evidence on the outside of the sperm whale when they've been in a fight. And not only did they eat them, but they're all clawed up and you'll see the suction mark, you know, the suction cup marks on their bodies from, you know, dealing with these things. And so, you know, there's a perfect example. Now we still haven't really been able to find one and track it and know its habitat and what it does. And this thing is huge. These things grow to be ridiculous lengths that the beaks, you know, would snap a human in half without a problem at all. You know, so the ocean, you know, is huge. All the land around us, we've got all kinds of land that people are not living in and observing all the time, like in a city. So you got to remove your mindset from your environment now and think about being out there in the middle of the woods, you know, with nobody around, no light pollution, no 5G, 3G, no microwaves going through the air, nothing. There's nothing there. And then tell me what's out there.
Right.
And most people will probably crap themselves and leave the area the next morning, you
right.
know, with right. all the strange noises that they hear, you know.
I mean, it, you know, like you said earlier, why one thing a lot of people say is why have they never found a body? And I'm like, for me personally, I grew up in the Boy Scouts. And so I spent a lot of time out camping in the woods. I never saw a whole bunch of dead animal, a bear or a deer. You see it as a roadkill. But if you go out in the woods, you don't see any fucking dead animals anywhere.
No, absolutely not. Nope, absolutely.
There's that. And then to your point that you were just making, one kind of piece of perspective that I got once from a show, some TV show or something, I can't remember. They did a little graphic, and it was that if you took every physical human body on Earth, it wouldn't even fill the Grand Canyon.
Correct.
So
yeah,
people can't tell me that they know for sure that we've explored every square inch of this place. Like, it's just that doesn't make sense to me.
How do I want to put this? Because I want to make sure I get my numbers correct, and I know I'm not going to be exact. But if you take every human on this planet, all 6 billion, 7 billion of us, we could easily all fit in Texas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep.
With lots of room to spare.
Yeah.
I mean, people, because of technology and cell phones and the internet and all this stuff, the world has shrank from a technological standpoint and knowing everybody's business at a split second and all that stuff. However, the planet is still a huge planet.
Yeah.
And there's lots of unexplored areas and unsettled areas.
Yeah.
Things that are out there that we don't even know about. But yeah, your example is perfect. Go out in the woods and go camping and tell me how many dead bear you find while you're living in a natural black bear habitat. You won't.
No.
There's even a squirrel. Yeah. Like, yeah. Dead rabbit, a dead squirrel, you know,
never found it.
Because things are scavenging and decomposing and eating. Yep. And, you know, so the fact that we haven't found the body of a of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or something along those lines. That doesn't surprise me. You know, can you say without a living or a dead specimen to look at that they're 100% there? No, but I think the possibility, let me put it this way. I think the probability is probably pretty good that there's stuff living out there that we don't know.
Yeah.
So
I've seen there's been some in more recent years. Did you ever hear of a show called Destination Truth? With Josh Gates?
Yes. Yes. Because
Expedition Unknown now, I believe.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. when he was still doing Destination Truth, they went in, I think it was a special or something, a one-off special, where they went to somewhere called like Serbia. I think I'm wrong about that, but somewhere side, maybe
in Russia.
See, I feel like that's what I feel like I'm wrong about that, but somewhere that's
where
out
all
there,
the gulags are, really.
Okay. Yeah.
They send you know, you're going to go to prison in Russia and they don't want to ever see you again. You go to Siberia.
I think it might've been somewhere in China, but I'm not 100% sure. But they found a whole big long track of footprints just leading up through the snow into this like onto this mountaintop basically. And they went down, I think they had spotted it from the air. So they went down and checked it out and it was a giant line of footprints. These things were massive. They looked crazy. It looked like they had like normal feet, but like kind of like claws for toenails. And that was on the news, like that got so like that was so big that he actually made it on the news for that discovery. And then, you know, it's hard to say in terms of YouTube videos and stuff, but right. I did see one recently, and normally I can sit there and go fake. Right. I'll sit there and debunk them all day long, but I found one that I swear if that video is real, and it's either a guy in a monkey suit or that's it. And it was very impressive. It was like, it wasn't pixely. It was a good tight shot. The guy wasn't shaken. It was, you see everything perfectly clearly. And it was just like this you see it from its back. And it was just kind of like, you just kind of see it from the torso up. And it looks like it's digging into a tree, like a large primate would do, looking for bugs, you know?
Okay.
And the guy's filming it and you can see its arms like reaching in and breaking branches and stuff. It's giant and it has full arms, not like bears. And then it stands up and you see how huge it is for a second. And then the guy takes off running, which I probably would have too.
Yeah.
But it was very impressive. If it's fake, they did a great job. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, in speaking of that and the footprints, you know, a lot of reports happen where they'll see one or two or maybe a set of three or four footprints and then they just disappear.
Right.
Which then puts me more into that different realm of, you know, is this again, you know, when you're thinking about like an entity of some kind that, mm-hmm. will appear to you one way. And if you go after it, it can then just go, I don't know, dimension hopping or I mean, whatever you want to call it. I don't know, but that's where I was saying that, you know, where I think a lot of this stuff is related. And I also think that maybe the power of our own minds can create these things as well.
Manifest.
Yeah, you know, the manifesting of it and of these things. So like some people can apparently, you know, call on these, you know, UFOs to visit them or UAPs, whatever. And I know there's some people out there taking video and pictures all the time because they know how to call them in. I don't know, but there's how legit that is or whatever, but
I mean they I don't know. I don't know what calling them in. That's interesting
because I think there's a protocol, right? This is like that Stephen Greer stuff, CE5, or I haven't dug into it a lot, you know, with me and Michelle being teachers and busy as can be and starting to do this, we're, you know, our whole podcast is really just, you know, taking people on this ridiculous journey that we're on to try to find some kind of answers. You know, from two teachers' point of view, one who's an English mythology teacher and one who is a science teacher. You know, so she's got a the literary background and I have the science background, and you know, we're getting inundated with so much information. It's I didn't even know how much of this stuff was even out there. You know, the giant thing, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, you found some bones. They could be mastodon bones, but they're scattered all over the place. They're fossils. You know, you find a part of a mastodon skull and where the nose, you know, the trunk was. If you look at one of those skulls, it looks like it's a cyclops eye. Like there's there's an eye right in the center of that skull. Well, no, that's where the trunk was. But so same thing with like dragons and things like that. These, you know, ancient people finding dinosaur fossils, you know, they pareidolia. They're going to tell you what they think that thing is, and whatever cultural references or religious references or whatever they have in their mind at the time will fill that gap for them so they can make sense of it. So, I don't know. I'm ending up, and Michelle is too, we're ending up with so many more questions than, you know, finding any kind of answers. It's now just kind of interesting just to talk to all of these guests that we have on the show and get their perspective. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder if this is kind of like one of those religious faith things that are we ever going to really be able to objectively measure and find some of this stuff. And I, you know, right now, I don't know.
That's a very good question. I hope so.
So do I especially from the UFO UAP thing. Because I mean, according to Lou Elizondo and, you know, the UAP report released to Congress in June, and now they're going to be pursuing that even more. You know, they're interested in it because they actually have, instead of the anecdotal evidence, they at least have some type of sensor data evidence that they can look into. And that's interesting because now you can measure it, right? At least you got something that you're measuring. We don't know what these things are, but we see fleets of them on radar now that we were told by like David Fravor and you know, those Tic Tac videos. If you listen to the one really close, you hear the one guy say, my God, there's a fleet of them. Talking about their radars coming in contact with all of these different objects that just fell from 80,000 feet down to 20 feet above the ocean. And they're in their flight path in a second. And then they disappear. Well, now we've got the videos and the radar tracks, and I think Lou Elizondo has come out and said that they go, they're transmedium. They go from outer space to our atmosphere and then into the ocean with no problems at all.
That's insane. Should be completely impossible.
That breaks all the laws of physics that we know. So who's controlling these? Even our drones can't do that. We don't have drones that can do that. So, you know, you could rule out some things. Oh, yeah, those are drones flying around. Those are, you know, those are drones coming from outer space or whatever the case may be. But show me a drone that goes from outer space to the atmosphere and can function at the same speed, do 90 degree angle turns, and then go into the water and do a couple hundred miles an hour and disappear.
And do all that with
no sound.
No sound and no sign of any sort of propulsion at all.
No external, no external wings, no, you know, articulation of flaps or ailerons or a rudder or anything. It just you know, they just go and do what whatever they want to do. And I heard Lou Elizondo recently on Theories of Everything podcast talking about a couple things that really made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. The one thing was is that they're pretty confident that these things are under some type of intelligent control, mm-hmm. because they will play with the fighter jets.
Right.
They played with David Fravor's fighter jets and
yeah.
and will counter their maneuvers. They will show up, you know, 20 miles away in their flight path because they already know that's where they're going, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So there's some type of a knowledge that's going on. And the other thing he said, which, you know, he kind of kept it on the down low, but he did say it, was that there is some pretty good, compelling photographic evidence of occupants.
Oh
yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
That was just the other day when I saw him talking to Kurt, I think it's Jay Mundell, something like that. He has the podcast Theories of Everything.
Nice.
And he's a theoretical physicist, and you know, he dabbles a little bit into the UFO UAP thing. And it's, you know, it's kind of blowing his mind a little bit, because where he's used to dealing with an objective world and all of this stuff and his theories of everything kind of thing, now he's sticking his toe into this realm of the UAPs and UFOs, and he doesn't, you know, he's all over the place with it. And then you have like Lou Elizondo coming on and saying, yeah, we've got some evidence that there's probably some type of occupant in there. And okay, who are these occupants, man?
Or what?
Yeah, there you go. Or because, what?
Because as now, was Lou referring to the tick? There seemed to be occupants in the Tic Tac.
You know, I'm not sure if he was that specific.
Okay.
He just said that they're, and I don't want to misquote him, okay, but I'm paraphrasing, that there is some good evidence, photographic evidence or video evidence of occupants in some of these UAPs.
Okay. And
I think that's pretty much basically somebody somehow got some kind of video or whatever of some kind of occupants inside of a UAP, which they deem as a credible piece of evidence,
mm-hmm.
that it's a UAP, some type, yeah, of unknown aerial phenomenon.
Yeah.
Now, what in the world?
That's why I asked if it was the Tic Tac, because like, yeah, we were just saying, if there are occupants in there, according to what we know it did, that breaks every law of physics.
Yeah.
It would also break every bone in a body.
Yeah, you'd be splattered against, yeah, the wall of the inside, literally, of that thing.
You'd be pink mist. Like, yeah. That's all you'd be. And right. So that makes me wonder if what if those things... I've been leaning more lately that I think a lot of these things might be either controlled by us or extraterrestrials, but if there's anything inside of them, it's probably a robot of some kind or some kind of drone thing. Because that's what we would do as humans. We do it now. Yeah, we got the rover on Mars. So why we send robots? Yeah.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't they send a robot to check it out, you know, to make sure that it's safe or whatever? You know, that's kind of where I'm at on stuff like that. I think a lot of it is like a feeder fish, you know, they're just sending it out there to see what comes back.
Yeah. There's, you know, there is theories out there that the grays are actually some type of a cyborg or a robot or something that are drones that are here collecting information or observing us and reporting back to, you know, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask Lou Elizondo was how many of these UAPs, how many different types are there? We know about the Tic Tac. Everybody talks about the Tic Tac.
Which, right, for the record, is the first that the release of that video is the first time I've ever heard anyone refer to a UFO of that sort of shape. Usually hear cigar.
Right.
I've heard a lot of cigar
for, like,
shapes.
Larger ones. Right.
Triangles, of course.
And no diamonds. Mention. And see, and there, and that thing that, that gets to me a little bit, because there's no mention of the type. Mm-hmm. You know, when you heard on our show, you know, Guy, and then we had Terry Lovelace on describing their triangle experiences, which were not positive at all. And then, you know, we're interested in that because that's what our experience with our sighting was, is, you know, but what are these Tic Tac things? And, you know, you had the Phoenix Lights scenario with a huge triangle, huge, that was sighted by thousands of people in Phoenix, Arizona, you know?
Yeah.
And so now, what was it? The USS Kidd. I think it was a destroyer.
Okay.
That released the video of the what they're calling the pyramids. They look like three dimensional pyramids flying and stay in pace with destroyers and not even worried about these, you know, high tech anti-ship destroyers. You know, some of the highest tech weaponry we have, and they're just kind of going about their business, you know. So
I can't remember where it was, but I know maybe it was Wright-Patterson. I know there was an Air Force base that had nuclear missiles, and a UFO flew over it and shut the whole place down. Like, shut off their ability to fire those nukes.
There's been something many like reports of that. There was I think it was Bentwaters in the UK.
That might be what I'm thinking of.
And they actually like had an encounter where, like, one of those craft landed on the outside of the base, and the Air Force guys went and drew it out. You know, it was some type of a smaller triangular craft sitting on the ground. One guy touched it, said there were some kind of weird hieroglyph type markings on it.
I think I remember this. Yeah.
And then it kind of went up and disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
very, very bizarre. Very bizarre.
Yeah.
I just wish, man, I just wish that there was a way that it could make sense. Like, it's hard to wrap your head around why they would even be here. You know, like, our radio signal only goes out so far. For them to even be able to know that life is here at all is a long shot already. But I don't know.
Unless they've been here for a very long time.
That too. That's a really good point too, actually. But the more stuff that keeps coming out, the more I see, I'm like, man, I don't think that's us.
No, I don't think so. And honestly, I would hope that the government, when they say they've said that it's not ours, and if they're using Lou as a mouthpiece to get that out there to say, you know, hey, just let people know, don't freak out, but it's not ours.
Right.
I would think that the government would say, yeah, you know what? Don't freak out, 'cause it is ours.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, start putting like China and Russia on notice. Hey, look at the things we got.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem that way. And they're confident that it's not Russia, it's not China, and they're saying it's not us. So yeah.
That is one major thing that they're saying.
So I mean, I guess you could take that either way. I mean,
yeah.
Right? You could take it as don't freak out. Don't freak out. But it's not us. Or don't freak out. It is us. So, you know.
It is tough though. Like, what if it is us? Because they kind of have a little bit of a track. Well, it just kind of depends, I guess. There's a lady, there's an author, a great author, named Annie Jacobson, I believe. And she used the Freedom of Information Act to get the government's official documents on what happened in Roswell. Now, the thing about the Freedom of Information Act is, you have to know specifics. You can't just walk in and give me your stuff on aliens. And you have to know, like, specific file numbers of this stuff. Right. So she did the hard work to figure it out, got their documents, and released a book about it. And basically, it was what those documents basically say is that it was a Russian, it was a Russian spy plane. And during that point in time, things were not good with Russia and the United States. And people started running with the UFO thing. And the government said, better to let them think that than to let them know that a Russian plane infiltrated our airspace that far. We didn't know about it. And the only reason why we probably do know about it now is because that it crashed. Right. And the government was more happy letting the people think it was just UFOs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, it's truly a matter of national security.
Yes.
You know, when you have your airspace and not only just, you know, military flying around and things like that, but you have civilian aircraft.
Commercial. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, we did a story about an airliner that reported they were at like 35,000 feet or something like that. And they saw this white tic tac shaped thing go right over the top of them. And, you know, they were thinking, hey, this is probably a out of control cruise missile that, you know, came from White Sands, New Mexico and got in the way. Not that would not be very good if it actually contacted that aircraft or something yeah. like that, but they're very close. They're very careful with those kind of things. And pilots have don't fly in these areas kind yeah. of a thing. They have very specific routes. They have to fly just, you know, so they don't interfere with military. But White Sands was about 300 miles away from that aircraft's flight path. And they said, you know, and the FBI eventually came out and said, yeah, well, we can tell you that it wasn't nothing from our bases.
Okay.
You know, so they gave the nod that it was a UAP by not saying that it's a UAP. The way they answered the question was, well, it wasn't from any base around where you were flying.
Right.
So make of it what you will.
So. Yeah. So I almost wonder, though, if this thing of them going, it's not ours and we don't think it's China or Russia. Is it another situation where because what they're working on is so top secret, they'd rather let us think it's UFOs than what it actually is? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it seems like they'd be willing to lie about that.
Yeah. Well, you kind of look at the. What was it? The F-117 stealth fighter.
Yeah.
That was in development in like the late 70s.
Yeah.
And the thing, the only way that aircraft flies is by very sophisticated computer programs that can keep the thing stable in the air, because it's not an airframe. It's a flying. It is a triangle.
Yeah.
Right. That has very weird shapes to it. So it can either deflect or absorb radar so that it is stealthy. But when people were seeing that thing fly, they were like, that's a triangle. That's a flying triangle.
It's also much quieter.
And they kept it that way.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it is much quieter because they have special types of engines on it. So it doesn't give off the heat signatures to be tracked by heat sensors and, you know, seekers and missiles.
And that, you said it was in development in the 70s?
Yeah, like the late 70s, like 78, 79.
So 10 years after we get to the moon.
Yeah. So imagine where we're at now.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So again, I'm not ruling out anything at this point.
Yeah. And quite frankly, it could be both. It could be if that stuff is. If what the things that people are seeing in the sky is us, in big quotes there, who's to say it's not what's that word? Recovered crafts and they reverse engineer it. There we go.
Reverse engineering, yeah.
Yeah. Like it could be both, you know.
That's what Wright Patterson was supposed to be famously known for, was that a lot of the pieces from Roswell ended up at Wright Pat. for that you know, purpose. Now, what I find interesting is digging into some of the Bob Lazar claims and things like that, is that one of the craft he says was uncovered in taken to S4 in mm-hmm. Area 51. Mm-hmm. What, you know, take that for what it's worth. You know, you got people out there that believe him like a religious cult, and you got other people that are just looking to debunk him. But he says that one of those craft, they told him, was found during an archaeological dig.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
his story is quite interesting. That thing that you said earlier,
interesting.
The thing you said earlier about calling them in or whatever. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. that's in a weird way, that's kind of part of his story too, because after he left working at that base, he would bring people to the outskirts of it and be like, every night there's a light show.
And yeah, because they were flying them.
Yeah. Yep. So and that the element that he named a number of years ago that just got proven to be real, element 151 or something like that.
115, is it?
No. Something. Yeah.
Anyways, and, yeah, it's a very unstable element. The Russians were able to create it for like a split second.
Just a second. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they did it.
And that he talked about one of the other big things that sticks out to me is he talks about how there was like a hand scanner that yep. he put his hand on. They just finally got pictures of it. Like it was 100% real. And at that base, at that point in time.
Yeah. When was that supposed to have been happening? In the 80s?
Something like that.
So, right. When he was out there, he wasn't out there something for very long, but
no. No, but that's his, you know. Yeah, it's tough because once you actually start to look into his story, there's a lot that's like it's never changed. His story's never changed after all these years. He's never made a dime off of any of it. In fact, he's had his house raided and been ridiculed more than anything positive has ever come. That's at least that's what he'll tell you.
Yeah.
And but when you look into it, there's a lot like you said, a lot of people just trying to debunk him. Well, the government tried to discredit him by deleting files so that way nobody could find him, like about his school records and stuff.
Yeah.
And his time working for them, of course. So,
well, I think the government has found out that their last 70 years of covering things up and lying and discrediting people and things like that, it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Kind of backfiring.
Yeah. Because you end up creating, you know, people that see something and they're adamant about what it is that they saw to a religious fervor and will believe it to the end. And then you get the other people that are like, no, no. And they try to debunk everything mm-hmm. and toe the government line. And the government's been discredited. I mean, we're here in Michigan. We know exactly how that goes.
Yeah.
In the 60s.
Yes.
Right. I mean, J. Allen Hynek in the swamp gas thing.
Yep.
And it shut all conversation down. Right. About mm-hmm. those things mm-hmm. in the 60s. And we're still being visited today, but their campaign was so good that even today, even with the release of this report now, Michelle and I bring up two friends of ours and stuff that we're doing this podcast, and some of them, you know, one eyebrow pops up and, mm-hmm. you know, oh, you're one of those people. Well, wait a minute. What do you mean we're one of those people? Yeah, we saw something. We had a very creepy, weird encounter with something really flying in the
profound
air.
Profound experience. Yeah,
it was 100% legit. If I would have seen it myself, I probably wouldn't have said anything because of the stigma right. that they've, you know, or Michelle, probably the same thing. I don't know. Michelle, would you have said anything about seeing that huge triangle if I wasn't with you?
No, probably not, because even with the fact that you are with me, I'm still a little hesitant to say anything to anyone.
Yeah. So, you know, the disinformation campaign and things has been so good that, you know, people will balk at it now, even to the fact that they've acknowledged that the Tic Tac and these UAPs are real. And there's still people out there going, So, you know, you kind of, it's one of those things where you got to kind of choose a side, and I'm probably going to get
if somebody has not seen something, to them, it didn't exist. Well, you know, I haven't seen $1 million all at once, but I know it exists.
Right. Right. Or how about this? I mean, here's a thought experiment for you. Prove to me that love exists.
Right.
How do you do that?
You can't.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm so giving you a look right now.
I know. See, that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna keep talking and you know, get in trouble. But
somebody's,
I mean,
gonna be pulling literally, couch duty.
they've been in the business of keeping things secret and discrediting people in this, just in this realm alone, for 70, 80 years.
Yeah.
And so now it's like a lot of people in, you know, the quote unquote, what I guess you used to call like podcasting and stuff, the old ham radio, the underground radio, mm-hmm. of yesteryear, you know, the independent media, I think is the name, and you know, that we get as podcasters and stuff. And boy, that's really pissing off the mainstream media, because nobody wants to go listen to their regurgitated garbage anymore.
Nope. That's why most mainstream media outlets have podcasts.
That right. And they still suck, because they say the same exact thing that they say on all the other channels.
Exactly.
These people are not reporters. They're reading
talking.
They read to you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're talking heads that read to you. They're not giving you, or they give you the opinion of the station, or, yeah, you know, whatever
that, like, means.
Right. Right. So, you know, and that's how, you know, for years they've been playing the X-Files music in the background when people come on to talk about UFOs and, you know, all of this stuff. Ooh, and you see the host, you know, looking at each other out the side of their eyes and, you know, kind of smirking. They make their little funny joke. Well, I hope we don't have any little green men show up today in the parking lot. You know,
which is why, you know, thank God for people like George Knapp.
Yeah, right.
That's what he did. He's an on-air TV reporter, and his station always took it and him seriously. He broke the Bob Lazar case all those years ago, you know, and that was on the news. He did that not on Coast to Coast AM. He did it on the news.
On the news, yeah.
You know,
but see, that the media knows how to play to our minds in a certain way of tribalism, and right, and humans want to pick something. So in other words, let's say, you know, politically, if I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican, I can't even talk to you, even though some of the things you might have I might agree with, but because you're under that umbrella,
right,
I can't listen to any of your ideas, even though you might have a couple good ones, and I might have a couple good ones for you,
right,
but you won't listen to me because I'm on that wrong team,
which is, you know, insane.
That's right.
Yeah. It's tribalism. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people are kind of hip to the way that the media likes to play people now, and everything
that
is playing to the emotions. And this really, you know, kind of showed you too, like how well in the pocket the media is for the government, for discrediting people.
Oh,
I know things about.
Oh yeah.
So, call it a conspiracy if you want, but I mean, come on. Hynek changed his views on the UFOs here in Michigan, and saying, yeah, it was total garbage. We didn't even investigate it.
Yeah, no, is it? I don't, with that kind of stuff specifically, stuff that we now know years later for a fact,
right,
that what we were told was a lie. That's beyond conspiracy. That's just something that happened. You know what I mean? Like,
and because it was so long ago, people that, you know, weren't involved in it just kind of shrug it off and go, well, yeah, well, how long is it going to take, you know, for people to find out, you know, how many years do we have to wait and find out about how bad the coof really was?
Yeah.
You know, without saying the actual name of the the bug, but you know, you know, is it going to be a special on 60 Minutes for 10 minutes long telling us, you know, in 20 years about, well, you know, they really shouldn't have done the jab thing and they should have done more testing. It really wasn't all that bad. If you do the math and figure out how many people actually died that actually died from the coup, you know, yada, yada, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will.
Absolutely. So
there's no doubt of that. For
I mean,
sure.
Everybody should be freaking out right now because you have a 98.2% survival rate.
Yeah.
Just in case you get the coof.
Well,
freak out, everybody.
Let's go to concerts. Come on.
Don't go anywhere. Hoard the toilet paper. Hoard the water because you got a 98.7 or 98.2% chance to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. And after having been in some of the crowds that I've been in the last few months, not too worried about anything.
I was going to say, you've been going to concerts.
Yeah.
You know, Michelle and I have been to casinos and flown across the U.S. and stayed in places and
are in
mask, no mask, whatever.
We went to, what was it, Laughlin in July, and I would say it was about a week after we got home that Nevada, five of their counties went back into mask mandate, and they're still in mask mandate.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and the numbers, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are. I mean, it's
numbers a number.
Right. I mean, okay, so how, you know, people are like, oh my God, did you see how many people tested positive? And I know we probably shouldn't be talking about this, but
right.
You see how many people tested positive? Yeah. Did you see how many were in the hospital? Wait a minute, what? Mm-hmm. Do those numbers tell you anywhere how many hospitalizations there were?
Right.
How many people successfully recovered? Well, about 98% of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many of them had comorbidities when they went in and the coof that attacked their weakened immune systems already? Well, you know, it's common sense, and a lot of people are not as dumb. They want us to be.
Exactly. And that is one of the things that I would say a tribalist mentality attacks is common
sense. Of course, because now you can create the others, right?
Exactly.
Now you got, you know, you used to have birthers, and now you had what was the deplorables or despicables or whatever for Trump supporters. And then you had the libtards, and then you have you know, you have this constant othering, you know, and
yes,
it's like, hey, I got neighbors, you know, and you think I care? They're my neighbors. I got to live with people. You think I really care about their political standing or what they believe about things? No, they're my neighbors.
That stuff, it drives me nuts because it's all two sides of the same coin. And they like, to your point with the media, they know better. One thing they do know better than anybody, what sells. And
absolutely. They're nothing but marketing.
Exactly. And it's sex and
division.
Division. There we go. Yeah. Thank you. Sex and division sell better than anything.
Right. It's the two biggest things that will play to humans' emotions, and once you can engage the emotion factor, you can control a population,
and the common sense goes out the window.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing where people on Facebook or whatever read a nice headline of something that's manipulated, you know, one way or the other in their news feed to piss them off, and without reading the article, they've already made a determination of what that story is. Because it's pareidolia of the emotional mindset, because now it's the algorithm has created the headline that will piss you off and make you think what that article actually is.
But here's the thing about the algorithm is that it's not that smart. And what I mean by that is, like, a couple years ago now, I started noticing myself, like, that would happen to me. I'd be going through Facebook. I'd see something that would piss me off, and I'd put the angry face and keep going or whatever, you know? Facebook would continue to show me shit like that. Yep. So a couple years ago, I stopped that, and I only interact with things that I like. So I'm only liking and hearting things and smiley faces. Now that's all I get. My whole feed is nothing but heavy metal bands and Ghostbusters and whatever else. Like, I don't get any of that stuff anymore, because the algorithm realized that it can't get me to click on that. And that's what it wants you to do. It wants to give you stuff to click on.
Yeah. Well, you know, people, and rightfully so, you know, people were all in arms about, you know, racial profiling and stuff done by police and things like that. And, you know, hey, more power to you. If you can prove that, absolutely, that shouldn't be done just because, you know, you think somebody's of a certain race, they're already guilty of something.
Right.
But why isn't everybody freaking out about digital profiling?
They should be. Arguably the most valuable commodity on earth right now is our data, and we give it away for free.
Yep. And our locations and what we like, what we dislike. And then those microphones are on your phones all the time, and they're listening and they're looking for keywords. The next thing you know, you go into your news feed and you'll see an advertisement for another concert coming to town.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I think it might have been on your podcast that somebody pointed out how, like, you can't even take the batteries out of our phones anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget who was that said that, but
I think that
did,
was Big Will from Band of Bearded Brothers.
Yes. Yes. I think you're right. And that just set a fire off in my head. I was like, I didn't even think about that. Like,
well, it's to the conspiracy / paranormal realm of, you know, mind control.
Mm hmm.
You know, and manipulation. I mean, that's, you know, and people have been studying the human mind for centuries, and they learned, you know, the Nazis were great with, you know, blaming everything on the Jews.
Yep.
There was their other, right? Yep, 6 million people were wiped out.
Yeah.
You know,
you could even look at people like Genghis Khan.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's a great example. Anytime someone, hell, even warring Native American tribes.
Absolutely.
You know, they still found a way to call them the other ones the other. You know,
that's right. That's
it's
right.
Insane. You know,
and that goes back to that whole tribalism thing.
Yeah.
It's a flaw of humans, unfortunately. But, you know, how do I want to say this? You dislike things based on what's around you, your environment, your worldview, your experience. So you discriminate. You could say, I don't like McDonald's.
Right.
Well, you're discriminating. You don't like McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an instinctual built-in thing that, you know, be wary of the stranger. We used to tell kids, you know, hey, don't talk to strangers.
Right.
Well, who's a stranger? Anybody outside of your family, anybody outside of your block, anybody outside of your city, anybody outside of your state, anybody outside of your country, mm-hmm. anybody that's not on the team that you're on, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, these are just general human failings that we have, but they're instinctual protective measures that have been put in place by, you know, evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate, and it makes a great selling point for people, you know, to say, you know, every cop is a racist.
Right.
Or whatever. Whatever you want to say.
Anytime anybody says every something is something, it's always wrong. You're always wrong.
but then they'll generalize like that.
Yes.
But you can't generalize them like that. And see, that's where things get ugly. And that's why you have this division, because mm-hmm. you're going to tell me you're all inclusive. Really? Then why are you even telling me about my bad thoughts?
Right.
If you're inclusive, you shouldn't care, right? And that's why, you know, Big Will and I were talking about, you know, it all, it really breaks down to the individual, you know, and that's what made this country so impressive, was that the individual had the power, not the state, not, you know, it was all individual rights.
Right.
And now we seem like we want to get away from that. It's like group rights now are what are becoming a thing, depending on what group you belong to and what check marks you have in your box. And, you know, so the division just continues and continues and continues. So,
you know, one thing that you said that I've heard you say this a few times before on other episodes, and it does surprise me the more that I think about it, is that whenever you'll bring up to certain people the whole UFO topic or this podcast or whatever, you'll get an eyebrow, or you're one of those kind of people or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me. That's weird to me because, you know, take out the tic-tac, the recent government admission and all that stuff. Look at shows on Netflix, on Hulu, on Hulu and Prime especially, and Travel Channel. Travel Channel is basically a paranormal channel at this point. It's all ghost and UFO paranormal stuff. It's all it is. It seems like it's all that's on that channel now, ever since, you know, Ghost Adventures started on there back in 2005. And it's interesting to me that they obviously know that this, like, people are consuming this stuff. People are, I feel like, more ready to believe in this kind of stuff than really ever before, possibly. And yet you're still getting those sort of reactions. That's so, because, like, it's been a long time, I guess, since I've gotten a reaction like that from someone. And anytime I have someone new on the show, the last question I always ask them is, have you ever experienced anything you would describe as paranormal?
Right.
And either it's, oh, no, not really, or someone cannot wait to tell me something that happened. You know, they're always excited about it. So that's strange. It's a kind of a bummer that you guys are having those reactions from time to time, because it does seem to be something that is, it seems like all the, you know, the crap, the game that they played that cover everything up and misinform everybody. It seems like a lot of that stuff might be starting to wear off on people a little bit.
Well, I think it's probably a very much a generational thing, and it probably has to do with like your career, you know, where you are in your career and things like that, where people will be like, as you're saying now about the Travel Channel, I haven't watched any of the Travel Channel in years, and I didn't. You're telling me all these shows now are all basically like UFO, and well, that's what the kids, you know, of this generation are growing up and able to see all the time. When I was growing up, we had In Search Of.
Yeah, I love In Search Of.
Mysteries,
one of my favorites.
And then we had the crackpots on the AM radio stations at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning from Coast to Coast AM or whatever shows, and the crazy conspiracy theories and theorists out there that were talking about reptilians and, you know, who really runs the world and this, that, and the other. And they're still going strong. But those were all my generation growing up listening to this. A lot of people, you know, knew that these people were crackpots and then blew them off because of what was sold to them about what these people were saying, that there might be a little bit of credibility to something that they're saying. You know, again, it's that nuance. You got to be able to pick out, you know, you don't have to agree with everything somebody says, to agree with a couple things that they might say or to make you think.
I mean, one of our mutual favorite, I don't know, I guess you could say podcast guests in recent years is, of course, Graham Hancock.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did at one point in time release a book suggesting that the world was going to end in 2012. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like that's okay. Like I don't fault him. You know, just because I didn't necessarily agree with that thing doesn't mean the stuff that he's doing over here is.
That's right. And he still gets painted as a, you know, a crackpot. Mm-hmm. But if you read his America Before, you know, magician of the gods and things like that. He's taken a very journalistic approach because mm-hmm. nobody else is doing it. Everybody has just signed off on ancient technology and stuff. Have just signed a way to just giving it to the academics. Yeah. Let the archaeologists deal with it. Why do I care about what these giant skulls are doing on Easter Island?
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's okay to accept that the few thousand humans that were alive after the last ice age in North America wiped out 180 species of megafauna that probably hunted them down like nothing, but we wiped out not 180 animals,
right?
180 species of animals, of megafauna, anything over about 100 pounds. We killed everything with all spears.
All of them. it seems a little ridiculous.
Right. But we wiped them out from North America down to South America, you know, because, you know, Native Americans and way back then had no respect for hunting and gathering and knowing their prey and, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. But people accept it, you know, and
for me, with that kind of stuff, it's very easy for me to not accept that because I learned that in school. And in since I've left high school, there I've found out many, many things, specifically from history class, but also a few things here and there from science classes were bold-faced lies that, you know, sure, teachers stood up and told us, and it was absolutely factually incorrect in every way. And so this idea that we don't have a full grasp on human history, it seems obvious to me in a lot of ways. It's like, of course we don't. Y'all, when I was in second grade, you told me that you know, Christopher Columbus, and he was a great guy, and Paul Revere, you know, and
he never stepped foot in North America
and he was a monster. Yeah. And like, they all were
humans are nasty.
Yeah.
You know, they conquered lands. It's how humans survived. I mean,
yeah.
You know, okay, so what are you going to blame all current humans now with the last name Columbus?
Right.
what are you going to do about that? There's nothing you can do. It happened in the past, but it's what humans did and still kind of do. We're actually taking that kind of warfare and we're going to the digital age with it.
Yeah.
With, you know, the social media and stuff, but no, you're right. It's,
there's a lot of stories they told us that you find out later aren't true. And so that makes you go, well, what else? Like, did Ben Franklin really have a lightning strike, a kite that he was holding? Like, really?
Exactly. You
know, I don't, it doesn't seem legit, but maybe, I don't know. I can't remember the name of the class. This was by the time I was at MSU. And it was a class actually talking about, a lot of things that Graham Hancock talks about, like the in that we talked about earlier, how there was the ice sheet over Michigan and it's the way, like that kind of science class. And I really appreciated that teacher, that professor, because he would literally go up there and be like, this is kind of what we think happened, but we're not really sure.
See, that's the difference between the hard sciences and the liberal arts kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is where I get on my high horse and go, yay, science teachers.
Yeah.
Yay, science. Because we have that built-in thing that science can change, right? The science behind something can change because our technology gets better or whatever the case may be. But the liberal arts, you know, man, they just parrot. They just parrot what they've been told to say. Mm-hmm. And that's what's getting a lot of parents pissed off in schools lately is, you know, are the teachers just saying the same stuff out of books that they've been told to say?
Right.
You know, and in the sciences, we're fortunate in that, here, do this experiment and tell us what happened. and let's see if it agrees with this person. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're fortunate in that regard that, you know, we've got the fine print that says, hey, this is what we think about plate tectonics,
right?
Or this is how we think the last ice age ended. But there are these theories out there, like, you know, a broken up comet smashed into the ice sheet and melted it extremely quickly, wiping out every large mammal, mm-hmm. you know, above 100 pounds, mm-hmm. and maybe some pretty advanced human civilizations that were living on the coast of every continent that were flooded and now 400 feet underwater. Yep. And by the way, we are a species with massive amnesia.
Amnesia, yes.
Yeah, as my favorite line from Graham Hancock, you know, mm-hmm. is you know, there's such a plethora of things that you can go down with this stuff.
It's fun. I think it's fun though, because to me, like, not knowing, I prefer living in an undiscovered world. Like, I'd much rather live in a world where that is still filled with maybe monsters and mysteries, as opposed to, no, we've got it all figured out.
See, that's the one thing. And I think I said this in one of my recent interviews, me and Michelle, we did, I want to say when we had Christina Gomez on, I said, or it was either, or maybe, oh yeah, she's awesome. Or it might have been Richard Serrett. Anybody that comes to me and tells me that they have the definitive answer on pretty much anything sets off my red flags.
Yeah. The only people that do because that are cult leaders.
Yeah. Because then you are so close-minded that you're not open to changes that might happen.
Right.
It might be outside of your control. And, right. and that's kind of where I was going earlier, was like, people that say these things talk as like the authority piece, that they've got all the answers, just listen to them. Mm-hmm. Well, no, no, I'm not going to listen to you. I will hear what you say. I will think about it, but
I'm open.
Right.
Just because you're telling me it's the answer doesn't, that's my problem. That's where I really run into religion.
Yep.
Because to me, to believe in a religion means you at least you've stopped looking. At that point, you've got your answers for you. So now you, and that's the way things are for you. So you've stopped looking. That's why I'm like, I can't stop. I have to. I don't feel like we have the answers yet. Like, we have to keep going. So,
well, I think that one thing that the technological or the digital revolution that's been happening lately is that it breaks that mold of, just believe everything I say. It's all good. You'll be fine. Stay in your little bubble. Just listen, you know, and do what I say. Now, all of a sudden, you have all these different options that are coming open to you.
Right.
Based on, hey, if I wanted to see what's going on in Japan right now, I click a button. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to see what the weather is in China, mm-hmm. if I want to see what the latest report is in England or France, and I can have it translated.
Yeah.
So I have all these different options open to me. I don't need to listen to just one person. But again, humans like being comfortable.
Right.
And so if you find somebody you can agree with, you're going to listen to them. And, you know, hey, I like this nice little comfortable house. And, you know, why would I want to screw that up?
Right. Yeah, and that's part of the problem. It's not a problem. It's a good thing, but
because you got people telling you they have all the answers and it's all figured out. And what I think what we're finding in this paranormal UFO community realm thing is that now with the digital revolution being kind of pointed toward the paranormal material and stuff, that we in no way have any of this figured out. It's real. The government decided that they better acknowledge it somehow. So they did a 9-page report that said, we figured out one out of 144 things.
And tuned. Also, we're not looking back that far.
Right. And stay tuned. Right.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. And now every year, you know, a report will go to Congress.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But it's too late. The cat's out of the bag. And And too many mm-hmm. people are starting to come forward who have credibility and credentials and, mm-hmm. you know, normal people like Michelle and I. And so, you know, when we run into those generational gap of like, oh, yeah, did you see Little Green Men too? Ha ha ha. Those people are afraid to have their worldview busted. Those are the ones that are comfortable in the matrix. Right.
Exactly. Right?
They like that comfort. You know, they want to be in that nice little warm, you know, battery pack and just do what you're told and everything will be fine. Well, when something comes along and causes a bunch of chaos in your life, like, I don't know, driving at 2:30 in the morning and you see a triangle floating in the sky with three lights in it that's the size of a damn Walmart hovering yeah. above the road. And then turns, it rotates. It's not moving. It rotates as you get on the expressway, then starts matching your speed as you go south on the expressway and then yeah. disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
World view blown.
Shattering window.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, you know, and here we are living the fast life back then of playing bingo. And we weren't even that old, man.
No.
It's like, you know, but it was, you know, something fun that we did on Friday nights, you know, just go and hang out and play stupid bingo to, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe win a little bit of money. And, you know,
lo and behold, we won something else.
Yeah.
Oh, you brought home the big ticket item that night.
Yeah,
my God.
Not something I was expecting.
No.
So, and that's what I mean. So,
what do you think it would be like? And how do you feel like coming from somebody who's never seen anything like that for themselves? What do you think it would be like if you ever saw it again?
Well,
definitely the phone would be ready.
Okay. So, yeah, you'd be more ready to take a picture or something like that.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, just, you know, for the record, why we didn't get any photos or anything. That was the furthest thing from our minds. Number one, I was driving.
So, yeah, you can't touch the phone while you're driving. I never do.
And I was driving at a very high rate of speed once I saw what we saw.
And when you first, how long was your experience?
Maybe a couple minutes, maybe.
Okay, exactly.
Right.
Until we lost sight of it. You're going to spend most of that time trying to figure out what it is, trying to figure out what the hell am I even looking at right now?
The last thing on my mind was, Michelle, get a picture of that, you know, film that. And it wouldn't have turned out anyways, I'm sure.
You should,
you know, with as dark as it was, with the weird lighting and things, and cameras on cell phones, they're great for selfies and pictures and good lighting and everything else. But those lenses are garbage for filming anything lit up in the sky or you know, they're not designed for that.
But new ones are quite nice.
Yeah.
I don't have one, but my Aaron and Preston, my cousin Preston, have shown me theirs, and I'm like, holy shit, really nice.
Yeah.
And of course,
if I saw something like that again, now it'd be a different story.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, okay, I'm going to actually stop and I'm going to try to get some kind of photos and I'm going to observe, record everything that I can, because I'm not going to be in that fight or flight mode.
Right.
I'm now into that inquisitive mode of,
right,
all right, what are you? What can I really see? How close can I get to this thing? Instead of, let's get the hell out of here.
Right.
Now, Guy and a couple other people that we talked to, you know, said that they actually had a communication when they saw their triangle south of Flint, where they were like, you don't belong here.
Right.
Now, was that something that was going on in my head? Was I receiving that as well? And that's why I wanted to get out.
And by communication, really, it was a feeling that they had.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember them saying, I heard the words in my head. It was just this feeling that they were overcome with. You got instantly hit with fight or flight. So it kind of seems like the same thing to me.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, during that 2 minutes, Michelle has her now famous line. When did the our military gets something like that, you guys should definitely put that on a t-shirt.
Have a triangle floating there and have it, you know, when the military have that.
That'd be a great t-shirt
for the night.
Right.
So you're literally, it's an example of you're seeing something that shouldn't be there. It makes no sense logically. And you're just trying to figure out what it is. And you have less than 2 minutes while you're driving at a high rate of speed to do it. Of course, you're not going to grab your phone.
I probably wouldn't have even been able to find my phone wherever it was in the vehicle at the time to use it.
And mine was in my purse.
Right.
And my purse was on the floor of the Jeep. So.
And she was.
We're driving the Jeep tonight, that night.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she was doing the observing. You know, she was on the passenger side.
Right. Yeah, that's your encounter is absolutely fascinating. Your guys' whole story, honestly, you know, starting the Facebook page and really not even being into any of this. And then
that's all the things.
Exactly. And all the things that you've discovered, like you said at the top of this one, you're like, I didn't even know half this stuff was out there. Had you heard of Graham Hancock before this? Had you heard of the missing 411, you know, all that stuff? That's
as for Graham Hancock, I heard mentions of this book that he wrote, which was the Magicians of the Gods.
Yeah, of the Gods,
right? Or Fingerprints. Which Fingerprints. One was the first one?
I think Fingerprints was the first.
Yeah, so I heard mention of that book, and I knew of this Ancient Aliens show on the History Channel, which, you know,
that's a big show.
from a pop culture standpoint, I knew of some things. I mean, you just kind of pick up things by osmosis, I guess, and and, you know, it just kind of seeps into your brain and
it's,
you
in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. You see a commercial for something, it puts a little bug in your brain, and it, you know, it fires off, you know, 3 months later. Oh yeah, I know, you know. But you know, it was nothing like that I was following every word of Stanton Friedman. I didn't even know who that was until recently, you know, Stephen Greer, you know, and then digging into Graham Hancock and then Randall Carlson.
Great.
Right. And then Richard Dolan and holy smokes. Like all of this stuff that's out there, it's like, oh man. No. So it was like, you know, I didn't know of any protocol or whatever you're supposed to do in a situation like that. No, we're gone. See ya as fast as I can get this thing going.
Yeah.
And, So, let me ask you that same question back to you now. Now this will be interesting because of my lack of pre-programming and following the show, the television shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, you haven't seen one of these things yet.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think your reaction kind of coming up in this? You're a younger guy. You're kind of the target audience of like a Christina Gomez and her bridging the gap of taking the old fogies information and taking it downstream to the new kids. You know, what would you do? How would you handle a situation like that?
A lot of it would definitely depend on the location of the occurrence. Now, because I am someone who has actively gone into the woods looking for dogmen. I have on more than one occasion paid money to get locked in supposed haunted locations overnight. I've done the Stimson Hospital in Eden Rapids, the USS Edson. We got locked on a boat out there in Bay City, an old Vietnam destroyer. We did the Randolph Asylum in Indiana. We've done a handful of these locations where we actually actively go. Fort Wayne in Detroit is probably the most active place I've ever been. The Dundee Mill down there in Dundee, Michigan.
Okay.
All these places I've been like locked in overnight. So I actively look for this stuff. I have I have amassed a small collection of evidence and experiences, but I have yet to find the thing to have the experience that makes me go, oh my God, I'm seeing it. Like, I'm actually seeing it for the first time. If it were to be something like that, if it were a situation like yours, where I'm moving at a high rate of speed on a freeway, again, yeah, it would kind of, if I were moving at a high rate of speed on free on I-69 in between Lansing and Flint, which is a trip I have done well over 1,000 times. I know that road like the back of my hand. I could do it blindfolded probably. If I saw it out there in the middle of the night, I would have zero issue probably pulling over to the side of the road and just stopping to take a look at it if I felt like that's what I needed to do. Because it's stopping on the side of the freeway at night, that's dangerous. But if there was no really other cars around and it was moving to the point where I'm like, if I want to keep seeing it, I have to stop. I feel like I would pull over and observe it. If I were like on a back country road, and again, by myself, that might be a different story.
That's the making of a movie right there.
that's the Betty and Barney Hill case. That's kind of a different story. I definitely think I would be scared. I definitely think the adrenaline, the hairs on everything would be on end and the adrenaline would be pumping. But it's something
you would probably you have a level of desensitized.
Yeah.
Right. You've been desensitized to to that aspect of it. At least if you saw something like that, your reaction would probably be different, like you said, based on your location.
Yes. Well, yes. And what I would say is I would assume that I would be like, I'm finally seeing something. We got one, you know, from Ghostbusters. But because this is stuff that paranormal things are things that I actively go out and are experiences I try to have. How do you go looking for UFOs? So I've never like really done that. I've definitely seen things in the sky where I didn't know what they were. But it was just a light, you know, it wasn't a shape or anything sizable. Right. There was this one thing, you know what? There's twice I saw this thing, and I think I actually figured out what it is. But in the middle of the city, in East Lansing, Michigan, across the sky, there was just a line of red lights, like little red lights. And for the longest time, I thought they might have been like those like Chinese candle things that you let go.
Oh, the Chinese lanterns.
Yeah, but they were way too in a perfect line. They weren't deviating at all. And then years later, I saw what how it looks when SpaceX launches satellites, and it looked the exact same. So I think Skylink. I was just seeing Skylink launches. But at the time, I was like, what the hell is that? And one of the times I was in literally downtown East Lansing outside of a bar having a cigarette at the time. And I'm standing there around a bunch of people. And I'm like, is nobody else seeing this? Like, what is that? Nobody could tell me what it was at the time. I think I saw it a flip phone, if it gives you an idea of how long ago that was. but yeah, you know, so there have been a couple times. I want to think that I would be inquisitive. I want to think that my years and years of watching and rewatching every countless documentaries and X-Files episodes and Coast to Coast AM episodes and just growing up with this stuff, I would like to think that I wouldn't immediately just be like, run, unless that feeling kicks in inside of you. There's nothing you can do about it. And it might be being caused by whatever sort of energy that thing is putting out.
Right.
You know, who knows how it's even being propelled? What do its engines use for that? And who knows what kind of effect those kind of waves could have on a human body, you know? It could just be down to the literal mechanics of the ship put out a certain sort of EMF frequency that makes us do that. And it's kind of like with ghosts when you have an EMF detector and it starts going nuts, and it shouldn't be. You start to feel something. There's electricity in the air. There's something going on. And that's something I'd like to ask you about, actually. As we, like you alluded to earlier, with new technology now being more pointed at the paranormal stuff, now more than ever, there's a plethora of ghost hunting equipment. The problem with ghosts is it's for people like us that like to look at things scientifically, you can't test it. It's so hard to like get real evidence. But now we have a whole lot of equipment that is pretty unique. And so how do you feel if someone were to present to you a piece of footage where, let's say I go to a place and I get some footage, and at the same time, I have an EMF detector going off, I have a motion sensor going off, all pointed in the same general area, there's nothing there. And at the same time as all that, we get like a disembodied voice come through on a camera or a voice recorder. How does someone like you approach something like that?
So the evidence would definitely be compelling from all those sources at the same time.
At once.
Yeah. I would definitely be very interested in that. And from a scientific standpoint, I would want to replicate that exactly how you did it. So the EMF detector, even using the same one plus a different one, you got to rule out the variables, right?
Yep.
That's the problem, though, with the whole paranormal issue, is that you could set stuff up in that same exact place and nothing would happen there. Again, it would happen 3 feet behind where you have all your stuff set up, and you would have eyewitnesses there, but then nothing would be caught on your equipment, right, which makes it not scientifically measurable in that regard. Right. It's like, you know, we speaking of that, you know, we when I found that Midland haunted Saginaw.
Yeah, thing about Dice Steve Prozac Shibby. Yeah.
Yes.
I love them. I've actually seen them live. I went to one of their premiere nights.
Yeah. Well, we watched two of his movies, the one about Hell House.
Yep.
And then the one about the dead or City Dice. Of the Dead.
Oh, OK. Yeah.
And I've been watching the one about the Saginaw House, Brook yep. or something like that.
Yeah, he's got like 10. I've seen them all.
Yeah. Yeah. Very They're great. Very cool stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, the creaking footsteps and things like that. Cool. Can we get that to happen again?
Right.
Can we have different equipment there? Can we have different observers there and get the same thing? And that's what I liked about the Hell House one, because you had all the police officers that were reporting, right? They were reporting the same things, and it was happening. They had a binder full of police reports.
It is the number one haunted location on Earth. It has more police reports on it than any other location.
It's all been documented by different people. Now, they didn't have the EMF detectors and disembodied voice recorders and, you know, voice recorders and things like that. It's too bad, but you know, so from a scientific standpoint, that's where you run into problems, you know. And my feeling on it is, you know, it's possible. You have some great evidence, and we need to corroborate, you know, we need a corroboration of evidence. We need multiple people at times. That the whole prediction thing is really, you know, the problem. That ghost has got to appear here at the same time that you recorded it tomorrow.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, and they just don't function that way.
Right.
So, you know, it's so hard to say. I mean, it really is, because there's things in science like, you know, measuring neutrinos and things coming from outer space and gravitational waves. They don't happen all the time, but you can measure them and you can reliably measure them. And that's the thing with paranormal. Can we do that? Well, we can collect evidence, and can we put empirical data on it? And that's kind of, and then you start getting into like the whole you know, debate versus science and religion thing. It's the same kind of an idea.
That's kind of where I was like, it's like at the end of the day, whether I say I believe in ghosts or not, I still don't know what they are.
Exactly.
Like, are they the spirit of a dead human? Okay, well, that means that humans have souls. We can't prove that.
And then why are they trapped here then?
Yeah, why
don't they have somewhere else to go?
Or is it a situation where now, you know, we don't understand whether or not humans have souls or not. And I would also argue something we do not have a very good grasp on is what time is and how it actually works. And are these just like slippages in time? Like, are we just like once in a while, is there just does something from the past show up, or are we seeing stuff from the future? What if a ghost is like someone that's going to be there in 10 years or something, you know? I don't know.
Well, now you're starting to get into, you're starting to get into the realm of what is consciousness. If you start talking about a soul, why isn't everybody exactly the same? I mean, are we just the combination of different, you know, genetic material and hormones that make our personalities, or what is this consciousness thing? And that's
right.
That's been, you know, the ayahuasca trips and people, you know, doing altered states of consciousness to try to find answers as to what that consciousness that they're altering even is. So
that stuff fascinates me. There should not be as far as I understand, there should not be a substance that makes everyone hallucinate the exact same thing.
Oh yeah. That's so interesting that Harvard has been doing studies in that. I think it's Harvard and Yale are doing experiments in that to see what's going on.
I'm really happy that they've started doing things with psilocybin mushrooms. I don't know if you ever saw, there's a great documentary on Netflix. It's not very long at all. It's called Fantastic Fungi. You would love it, especially as a science teacher. Because an earth science teacher too, because he breaks down the mycelium network and it's as we always grew up, like, you know, like trees can talk to each other and stuff like that. This movie actually does the legwork and shows you scientifically how every plant on earth is physically connected and does communicate every living organism on earth. And it's a beautiful and fascinating documentary. I highly recommend that one. It's done by a guy named Paul Stamets, who's been on Joe Rogan a number of times, but he's also his research up until recently, back when he started doing it, his research was the first research on psilocybin mushrooms and things like that, that was actually sanctioned by the United States government and the DEA. Mm. So he was like one of the first guys that's allowed to do this stuff and discover this stuff. And the way he frames it in the film is absolute. Like, you go, the first time I saw it, my jaw was on the floor. I was like, oh my God, it's the earth is a living thing. And it has a brain. The mycelium network looks like neurons in our brains. You know, it's really fascinating.
Well, you know, okay, so you got consciousness, right? And that's related to the soul and you know, that being self-aware, you know, kind of a thing that you are alive in some way as an individual. Mm-hmm. Like, you can take a cat or a dog and stick them in front of a mirror and they'll act like they're seeing a new animal.
Right.
So they're not really self-conscious yet. They're conscious enough, you know, at a different level. But then, you know, you brought up time, and I always found time to be a very interesting thing because the universe doesn't care about time. It doesn't function in time. We do. And the only thing that we use time for is so that we know our place in the universe.
It's just a measurement.
It's just a measurement of where you're at in this huge vastness of the universe.
I mean, cosmos.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, you know. I don't think there's like slips in time and things like that, but I think there are things that are happening in the universe that make us perceive that there's that kind of stuff that could happen. And so, you know, time is interesting because, you know, it's not space and time, it's space time.
Yes.
Right. So, yes. You know, boy, you talk about quantum physics and things and you start going down those rabbit holes, mm-hmm. and you end up with a big rabbit hole right in the middle of your brain trying to wrap your head around all of it. But, you know, time doesn't matter. You know, like we say, the universe is 15 billion years old, 15 and some change billion years old, based on experiments and observations and many people doing these things. Okay, fine. Explain to me what 15 billion years is.
Yeah.
We live in a little microcosm of time, you know, 70 to 100 years, something like that. You know, even thinking back 1,000 years ago, how do we relate to that? It's a number. You can't wrap your mind around it. That's why, you know, we can't even think about like how did our grandparents live with no electricity and no phones and no running water, and they had to go to a well and they had an outhouse. They didn't,
what did they do all day?
Right.
You know,
how did we survive? It's like, my God, we can't even deal with the measurement we've created.
Right.
Right. Know, we've created time so that we could know our place in the universe, but we can't deal with it in our own heads. So that vastness. So, you know, those are concepts, you know, the soul, consciousness and all that. And then I think that's where you get into your mushrooms and your psilocybin and ayahuasca and the altering your consciousness. So you can slip, I guess you could slip out of that realm of time.
The thing that you're locked in.
Yeah.
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 It's a door.
Yeah. So, you know, and there's some people that say that, you know, we have, and I kind of believe this, we have a lot of untapped potential. And we're kept in these square boxes we call houses, mm-hmm. and kept comfortable, and we deal with the glow of the screens, and we get people telling us every day what to think and what's a good behavior and what we should eat and what we should do with our time and what video games to play and what shows to watch and what podcasts to listen to and all of this stuff. But what else could we possibly unlock with our brains, you know, with our creativity that is kind of being stifled and controlled by all this other distractions.
Yes.
So what untapped potential do we have? And I think a lot of ancient people knew this already.
Yes.
Right. So I think that they were aware of this in this other realm. And it's hard to say, man, but I'm getting on board with this whole thing that you can go to a different place because all these people are having these same experiences without knowing anything about, you know, a previous trip that somebody took on ayahuasca, and they're drawing and describing the same entities or whatever they are.
The geometric patterns that they see.
Which, you know, which is interesting because if you start digging into sacred geometry and numbers and things like that of how the universe functions, you see those same patterns emerge. It's always the same patterns, and usually it's, you know, the number 9 that keeps appearing. Which is funny because you were talking to me via email about some certain synchronicities and stuff that was going on, dude.
We have some very bizarre synchronicities, especially when it comes to numbers. Very strange stuff. But I love that. I love it. Whenever I see a synchronicity like that, for whatever reason, the thought that goes through my head is, oh, I'm on the right track. Like, this was supposed to happen, kind of a thing. I don't know why I think that way, but. Yeah. It just always pops in there whenever I see stuff like that. But you know, yeah, it's yeah, I you know, we got this whole thing of like with consciousness of like these people coming back, remembering past lives. Like, what the hell is that? Like, to the point where a child will lead police to a body and say, I was killed. This is my body. This is the guy that murdered me. The police go to the guy's house and he confesses. How do you, I just don't know how to like reconcile any of that. You know what I mean? It's so mysteries. We still have so many mysteries to uncover. And it's, I think it, that's why I love this stuff. That's why.
And that's why all my flags go up when people tell me they have all these answers.
Yes. Yes.
How exactly. Can you be so arrogant and self-centered to tell me you know everything and what the best decisions are for people and me and whatever and how I should think or what I should worship or whatever? How dare you come to me and say that when you can't explain to me why does a plant follow the sun as the sun travels, right? Well, is that conscious or not? It's a living thing.
Well, watch Fantastic Fungi. You might think it's a form of consciousness.
Right. Well,
they don't have, they definitely, it's like Carl Sagan, you know, the hubris of man, the, that famous, one of my favorite speeches of all time is him saying the pale blue dot speech. And, think of the rivers of blood that were spilled so that they could become momentary masters of a speck of a dot.
Yep.
You know, in infinite nothingness, floating forever in infinite nothingness.
Exactly.
How long have telescopes, actually telescopes probably been around a long time. But, you know, say 500 to 1,000 years when like Galileo started doing his stuff or something, you know, roughly something like that. How do we even have enough data to know it's 15 billion years old, the universe? Like, we have so many conflicting things about the Big Bang and like we're seeing different things and, you know, it's the idea that we can just explain it. And, you know, we've had movies for less than for about 100 years, 100 years. We've had film on big screen.
Right.
And yet we think we know everything. Like, you know,
Well, I do want to say just real quick, Michelle is bowed out. She's got an early morning tomorrow and stuff, so she said to tell you good night, and she dropped off the call. So that's, if people are wondering where she disappeared to, she's going to the Cloud Nine, and gonna have some dreams of aliens or something. Who knows?
Yeah, hopefully she doesn't get woken up at 3:33 again.
Yeah, no, that's me, man. I've been snapping pictures of my phone when I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, it's time to get up, 3:33 or 3:30. It's usually one of those, almost, I want to say, a couple nights a week.
That's very bizarre.
It's very, very, very bizarre. Very bizarre. But yeah, no, man, it's there's so many great mysteries out there. And that's one of the things I really like about podcasting and stuff is you can hear all these perspectives from people and, and talk to amazing people with their own perspectives about things. And then you find out some of the synchronicities and things that have gone on with them and you, and man, we're all connected on that little blue speck, man. Yep. You know,
the pale blue dot.
Yeah, and I think that was the point of Sagan's idea. Yeah. I don't think I heard his speech before, but I think that was the whole point, man. Look at the universe or what we can see of it. Look at it, and there you are on that little thing. Ding.
Yep.
And we're all worried about, you know, what's the saying? Don't sweat the small stuff, it's all small stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not even a dot. Nope. On this planet from outer space. Nope. I mean, honestly, you're not.
One of the things he says in that speech is we are at the moment we are alone in the universe. There's nowhere else that we know of right now that we can settle. Travel, yes, but settle, no. Right. No one is coming to save us from ourselves.
Right. And that's right. Another thing, too, that really throws up flags for me is when people tell me about these things being saviors of, they're worried about the planet and they're worried about us and stuff. Then why are they only appearing to you?
Right.
Show up, man. You'll be top notch on Fox News and CNN, and you'll get all the coverage and everybody will get to hear you saying, hey, you're destroying your planet. Stop being dumbasses.
Right.
Right. Or whatever the case may be. Stop the nuclear weapon stuff. You know, you guys got to get your acts together somehow. Stop treating each other like crap or whatever, you know. I'm sure they're smart enough to understand our media and stuff that you know, how we do things here. If they're zipping around doing 90 degree turns and not dying and pulling, you know, 2700 G's or whatever number and being just fine, I'm sure they know what our little primitive technology is, you know, and how it functions. I mean, they turn on and off our nuclear missile sites.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a huge thing. And also in Russia too. The Russians came out and said that they were turning on the rockets. They were getting ready to launch.
Yep.
And then they got control back.
Yep.
So that's kind of scary. So they were playing and they learned everything about our major weapon systems. Why did they do that? Probably because that's the most threatening possible weapon we would have against them.
So they wanted to learn it.
So they wanted to learn it and they learned it in 10 seconds.
Yep.
And now the rest of everything else, who cares? We can't touch them. We can't touch them.
Literally.
You know, right. So they, you know, operate with impunity.
Yeah.
We're just getting better at tracking them.
And spotting them.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah. It's fascinating. But
it really is.
The whole consciousness thing, man, it's fascinating, which brings me back to, are these things just our trapped mind starting to open up and create these things?
Us from the future?
Exactly. But what is the, what is the future if time isn't real?
Right. Right. Oh my God.
What is the past if time isn't real?
I was so glad we got down these rabbit holes, because this is stuff. This is stuff I used to drive around for hours at night on back roads up here in Lansing with my buddy, because we would take all the at Lansing Community College. We took all the philosophy classes.
And
we would just go, what is real? What can you prove to me is real right now, bro? Like, you know,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. And it's, I love these conversations.
Well, back into was it Schrodinger's cat, right? Yep. If you don't observe something, does it exist?
It's both dead and alive at the same time, until you observe it.
Yeah. So you observe it. And then by the act of observing something, you've changed the experiment.
Yep.
Yep. Which is interesting, because they say the same thing about certain electrons and atoms and things like that, that they appear and disappear and can be in two places at once and
seem to know when they're being observed.
Yeah, exactly. And then react to being observed. It's very interesting stuff. But yeah, man, that rabbit hole, if we've created time as just a measure of one cycle of the sun, you know, rising, quote unquote, rising in our sky and setting, you know, when really it's not doing that at all. We're spinning around it and we're spinning around our own axis.
Yeah.
So all we're doing is tracking.
Yeah. Yeah.
That.
Yep.
You know,
that's all it is.
So then what is time travel? It maybe if we got out of that mindset of thinking like that, again, that's, you know, following this paradigm, maybe these things don't follow that. If they're not confined by the thoughts of time, then, you know, maybe that's why they can go so fast or do the things that they do, because, well, what is time? You know, what is distance? Distance is
right
in time.
And again, it's
time out of the equation.
And it's space time.
Yeah.
So if they're able to take out the time part and figure out a way to manipulate space, then there you
That's
go.
That's warp drive, right? Isn't that right. warp drive where you warp space?
Right. Yeah. You cut a wormhole, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man. I love this stuff so much, man. I love this. But, man, we have been going for a while. I feel like I've kept you for way too long.
Yeah.
I know we're on each other's podcast right now, but
yeah,
I do feel like I've kept you for way too long. So we should.
Well, that's why this is a bonus episode. This is just right?
grab bag.
The insane ramblings of two podcasters. Well, it was three until one had to tap out, and I don't blame her. Yeah. Our mornings start at, 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, man, it's great. I mean, because having these kind of conversations, I don't know if anybody will get anything out of this, but so. Other than going, man, these guys are nuts.
Get these two in the same room, see what happens.
Maybe that radiation from that UFO really fried his brain. I don't know. But yeah, man.
Well, I can't thank you enough for your time tonight. This was an absolutely wonderful conversation. I'm really glad we got to do this during October. And next time I have anything at all or any new topics or anything to talk to you about, I'll reach out and we'll do it again. Especially if I do any more haunted locations before the end of the year and I actually experience anything, I'd be happy to send something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So.
Yeah. Hopefully I can get Aaron back on. And I know my roommate really wants to talk to you guys. He's a big fan. He does all the ghost stuff with me, and he's got a lot of personal experiences of his own he could share.
Oh, that would be awesome. So, yeah, for sure. All right, man, let's end this here. All right, everybody, it's Burton from Lost in the Dark Podcast.
And it's Wayne from the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast.
So make sure you check them out, and we're going to say goodnight.
You have been listening to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast. You can reach us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at mi_UFO and join our Facebook group by searching for Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters. So until next time.